الحمد لله رب العالمين، وأصلي وأسلم على المبعوث رحمة للعالمين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه ومن اهتدى بهديه واقتدى بسنته إلى يوم الدين، وبعد. فقد قال جل وعلا في كتابه المجيد وفرقانه الحميد: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اليوم أكملت لكم دينكم وأتممت عليكم نعمتي ورضيت لكم الإسلام دينا، فمن اضطر في مخمصة غير متجانف لإثم فإن الله غفور رحيم. صدق الله العظيم. Honorable scholars, respected brothers, friends and elders, the month of Rabiul Awwal has become somewhat synonymous to the seerah of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And as we draw towards the end of the sacred month, I thought it appropriate that in our brief interaction today on this momentous occasion of Jum'ah, I endeavor to walk you through some of the final comments and advices in the life of the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It is basic Islamic knowledge that the injunction of pilgrimage came in the 9th year after Hijrah. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had then sent Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu as the leader of Hajj. Under his auspices, there were 300 pilgrims that had accompanied him. And in the 10th year of Hijrah, the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam made a pronouncement, a declaration, an announcement that he himself will be embarking on this journey. Words cannot adequately express the jubilation that had gripped the Sahaba Ridwanullahi ta'ala alayhi ajma'in. He was accompanied by his 9 spouses, his blessed daughter Fatima radiallahu anha, and he left Medina Munawwara yawm al-Sabt on a Saturday, لِخَمْسٍ بَقِينَ مِنْ ذِي الْقَعْدَةِ on the 21st of ذِي الْقَعْدَةِ بَعْدَ أَنْ صَلَّ الظَّهْرَ أَرْبَعًا after offering 4 units of prayer in Dhuhr Salah, وَتَوَجَّهَ بِمَنْ مَعَهُ مِنَ الْمُسْلِمِينَ إِلَى مَكَّةِ and he embarked on the sacred journey. As he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam moved on, وَوَافَاهُ فِي الطَّلِيقِ خَلَائِقْ لَا يُحْصَوْنَ people started coming in their droves and their scores and their multitudes to accompany him until he arrived in the blessed city of Makkah. Can you imagine? And the brain freezes. That euphoria, that excitement, that greatness, the pinnacle of nobility that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam surrounded by the noble companion in the period of revelation, and he arrived in the blessed city of Makkah on a Sunday, on the 4th of Dhul-Hijjah. He performs the tawaf and then remains, and I don't want to go into the rituals because I'm going to try and speak on the sermon itself. And then he stays in Makkah Mukarrama يوم الأحد يوم الاثنين يوم الثلاثاء يوم الأربعاء 4 days. فلما كان يوم الخميس when it was Thursday ضحا at 4 noon just before midday توجه بمن معه من المسلمين إلى منى he advances to the plains of Mina. He arrives in Mina. He then performs the Dhuhr Salah, Asr, Maghrib, Isha, spends the night there. After offering the Fajr prayer, فَلَمَّا طَلَعَتِ الشَّمْسِ when the sun rises, مَكَثَ قَدِيرٌ he pauses for a few moments, and then this entire cavalcade and entourage moves from Mina to Arafah. When the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam arrives in Arafah, ضُرِبَتِ النَّمْرَةِ the tent is pitched. He is mounted on his camel Qaswa. Qaswa. The books of history record it. The Dhuhr and Asr Salah is merged. And thereafter he delivers the historical khutbah that will continue to reverberate in the corridors of Islamic history till the day of Qiyamah. Suffice to say, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was the most articulate human that inhabited the planet. Every utterance of his was full with wisdom, was brimming with guidance, to the extent, just to objectively digress momentarily, that there was a person by the name of Zimar. He came to Makkah.
People had indoctrinated him and told him that he is a man, وَالْعِيَاذُ بِاللَّهِ, is mentally impaired. فَسَمِعَ سُفَهَاءَ مَكَّةَ يَقُولُونَ إِنَّ مُحَمَّدًا صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ مَجْنُونَ. So he honestly and earnestly came to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and he said, would you allow me? Probably I can cure you. Now imagine what a provocative statement that is. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's intelligence is such that Wahab ibn Munabbih rahimahullah said, إِنَّ اللَّهَ تَعَالَى لَمْ يُعْطِ جَمِيعَ النَّاسِ مِنْ بَدْلِ الدُّنْيَا إِلَىٰ إِنْقِضَائِهَا مِنَ الْعَقْلِ بِجَمْبِ عَقْلِهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ إِلَّا كَحَبَّةِ رَمْلٍ مِنْ بَيْنِ رِمَالِ الدُّنْيَا. That the combined intellect of the entire universe from inception to destruction is like one dust particle. And the exclusive intellect of the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is like the deserts of the world. To say to such a man, I want to cure you, but the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam remained calm and measured, calculated. In English they say, regardless of what people tell us, we are responsible for the manner in which we react. We can be bitter or better. Regardless of what people tell us, we are responsible what we say. Ibn Taqiyyat al-Eid rahimahullah said, مَا تَكَلَّمْتُ كَلِمَةً إِلَّا أَعْدَتْنُ لَهُ جَوَابًا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. In my entire life, I never uttered a statement, but then I prepared a response for it. If Allah was to interrogate me, why did you utter that? I prepared a response. I calculated myself. I analyzed myself and then I spoke. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam didn't respond. He was just calm. He was just measured. He was just composed. And he said, إِنَّ الْحَمْدَ لِلَّهِ نَحْمَدُهُ وَنَسْتَغِينُهُ وَنَسْتَغْفِرُهُ مَنْ يَهْدِهِ اللَّهُ فَلَا مُضِلَّ لَهُ. And Dhimar said, أَرِدْ عَلَيَّ هَذِهِ الْكَلِمَاتِ. Repeat what you said. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam casually repeated it. He said, فَقَدْ بَلَغْنَا قَامُوسَ الْبَحَرِ. This is the pinnacle of excellence. I'm convinced that I need treatment and not you. And then he takes the shahada. ثُمَّ أَتَى ضِمَادٌ وَهُوَ الْأَذْلِ مَا هُوَ إِلَّا أَنَّ مُحَمَّدًا قَطَرْ أَسْلَمَ لِلْوَقْلِ وَذَهَبْ. The poet said, then came along a man by the name of Dhimar, belonging to the Azra tribe, and he was mesmerized by one brief utterance. So if that was the general address of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, can you imagine what the final address was? So everybody has gathered in the plains of Arafah. The Dhuhr and Asr prayer has been merged. They are in their thousands. أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ أَوْ people, هَلْ تَدْرُونَ, do you know, فِي أَيِّ يَوْمٍ أَنْتُمْ وَفِي أَيِّ شَهْرٍ أَنْتُمْ وَفِي أَيِّ بَلَدٍ أَنْتُمْ. Just look at the teaching methodology of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We might have the cap of a father, of a teacher, of a tutor, of a guardian, of a custodian on our head. How did the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam approach things? Oh people, do you have a clue regarding this day, this month and this location? Are you aware where you have assembled? And they said, yes, of course. في بلد حرام, في يوم حرام, في شهر حرام. This is the most sacred day. It's the most sacred month. It's the most sacred moment. He said, okay, now that you've understood how sacred this day is, and how sacred this month is, and how sacred this moment is, فَإِنَّ دِمَاءَكُمْ وَأَمْوَالَكُمْ وَأَعْرَاضَكُمْ عَلَيْكُمْ حَرَامٌ كَحُرْمَةِ يَوْمِكُمْ هَذَا. Then listen to me, the honor, the blood, the esteem of every believer is as sacred to you as the sanctity of this day, month and location. If we look around us today, one of the biggest things that has paralyzed the Muslim Ummah is the internal bickering and fighting. It has caused havoc within our ranks. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said, and if we can just heed the final advisors, he said, المؤمن مرآة المؤمن. Listen to this hadith very clearly. is that a believer is a mother unto another believer. We've looked at the mirror till today for a thousand reasons. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of us all? Mirror, mirror on the wall. All these nursery rhymes and songs and other things that we look at. But look at the profound, prophetic analogy. What did the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam say? A believer is a mirror. The ulama and the scholars of hadith deduce multiple deductions and analogies between a mirror and a believer to another believer. Let me briefly run you through it. The first thing you will notice, إِنَّ الْمُؤْمِنُ يُرِي أَخَاهُ عُيُوبَهُ الَّذِي لَا يُمْكِنُهُ أَنْ يَرَاهَا مِنْ نَفْسِهِ كَمَا أَنَّ كَثِيرًا مِنْ أَعْضَاءِ الْجَسَدِ وَعُيُوبَ الْبَدَنِ لَا يُمْكِنُ رُؤْيَتُهَا إِلَّا بِالْمِرْآةِ فَيُعَلِّمُكَ أَخُوكَ الْمُؤْمِنُ إِذَا جَهِلْتَ وَيُذَكِّرُكَ إِذَا نَسِيتَ وَيُصَوِّبُكَ إِذَا أَخْطَأْتَ وَيُنَبِّهُكَ إِذَا غَفَلْتَ. So you would know there are many limbs and organs of the body you cannot see if you don't have the aid of a mirror. If a person has a scar on his cheek, if there's some pigmentation on his face, if he wants to see his nails in the hair salon, if they have swept through his hair correctly, he cannot do so until and unless he has a mirror before him. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, just as it's not possible for you, this is the deduction the scholars make, to analyze your entire body and to see other parts of your body without the medium of a mirror, likewise it's not possible for one person, for one believer, to advance in life until and unless they doesn't have this mutual brotherhood where we mutually support, encourage, and remind one another. فَيُعَلِّمُكَ أَخُوكَ الْمُؤْمِنُ إِذَا جَهِلْ. So your brother would advise you when you display ignorance, when you ذَكِّرُكَ إِذَا نَسِي, and he would alert you when you become oblivious. There is a narration in Tabrani. Sayyidina Muawiyah radiyallahu anhu attends the Friday pulpit, and he says, O people, الْمَالُ مَالُنَا وَالْفَيْهُ فَيُّنَا. The wealth belongs to me, the booty belongs to me, and I am in power. فَمَنْ شِئْنَا أَعْطَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ شِئْنَا مَنَعْنَاهُ. Whoever I am comfortable with, I will give him the wealth, and whoever I have reservations over, I will not give him access to the wealth. He makes the statement, the Jummah ended, people disperse. The next Friday, Sayyidina Muawiyah radiallahu anhu attends the pulpit, and he repeats the same statement and makes a sweeping statement. Nobody challenges him. The wealth, the booty, the assets belong to me, I'm in charge, and if I'm comfortable and I deem it correct, I will pass it on to you. The narration is in Tabrani and it's authentic. The third week he makes the same statement. فَقَامَ رَجُلٌ مِنَ الْقَوْمِ. Somebody from the gathering stood up and he said, أَلْمَالُ مَالُنَا. Oh, Sayyidina Muawiyah, we differ with those sentiments of yours. We have a share as the subject, as the public. We have a right in that wealth. فَمَنْ حَادَ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَهُ حَاكَمْنَاهُ إِلَى اللَّهِ بِأَسْيَافِنَا. And if anybody denies us our share, we will deal with him in the appropriate manner. The Jummah was over, Sayyidina Muawiyah summoned that person. Everybody said, Halak al-Rajul, this man is in for doom. Anyway, he's taken into a private meeting and it continues for an extended period of time. Curiosity in people, what's happening behind the doors? There's a knock on the door. When they open the door, Sayyidina Muawiyah radiallahu anhu and this person from the congregation who challenged Muawiyah radiallahu anhu is having a casual, interactive social discussion. So people found this to be very strange. He's the man who challenged you, and yet you take him in and you give him comfort and you acknowledge him. What's the reason? Allahu Akbar, these were our glory days. Sayyidina Muawiyah radiallahu anhu said, I made a deliberate, provocative statement. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, prior to Qiyamah, there will be rulers and leaders, yatakallamun. They will speak their heart out. They will speak their mind out. They will make careless statements. They will make reckless decisions. لَا يُرَدُّ عَلَيْهِمْ. Nobody will have the muscle and the clout to challenge them out of fear of their tyranny. So I said this. hoping that somebody responds to me so that I'm not classified as an evil ruler. The first week I said it, nobody replied. خَشِيْتُ أَنْ أَكُونَ مِنْهُمْ I said, oh, looks like I'm one of the evil rulers. The second week I said it, nobody challenged me. My fears became louder. The third week, this man challenged me. He's actually given me a new lease to life. May Allah keep him alive. So that's the first thing of a mirror. The second thing of a mirror, الْمِرْآةُ صَادِقَةٌ فِيمَا تُعَكِّسُهُ مِنْ هَيْئَتِكَ We're talking about the advice of the Prophet ﷺ, the honor of a brother, the honor of a human. A mirror is honest. A mirror will show you how beautiful your features are, and it will also probably show you if you're bald. No offense to anybody who doesn't have hair, I'm just giving a loose remark here. So a mirror will highlight your beauty. You've got lovely eyes, you've got striking features, you've got a beautiful height, you've got a brilliant physique, you've got a lovely six-pack, you've got it all in order, but probably you have no hair on your head. The mirror will not camouflage one with another. The mirror will reveal your beauty, your physique, your height, your sharp features, your impressive look, and at the same time the mirror will show that unfortunately the man is bald up there. يُرِيكَ حَسَنَاتِكَ وَيَشْكُرُكَ عَلَيْهَا وَيُرِيكَ سَيِّئَاتِكَ وَيُنَبِّهُكَ عَلَيْهَا And that's how a believer has to be to another believer. That when my brother does good, when my sister does good, when a human does good, I thank him, I acknowledge him. We living in a world what they talk of, I was reading NPD. NPD. So I thought, oh, okay, this guy has a degree. He says, no, it's not a degree, it's a disorder. Narcissist personality disorder. So what's this narcissism all about? Just to inflate myself, just to praise myself, just to compliment myself. So what's the second analogy we learn from the mirror? That the mirror tells us everything. We praise people for their good, and likewise we inform them of their wrong. The third thing, يُرِيهِ عُيُوبَهُ مِنْ دُونِ تَهْوِيلٍ أَوْ تَفْخِيمٍ A mirror does not magnify or exaggerate. If there's a scar on one cheek, the mirror doesn't reflect it on both the cheeks. If there is a scar on the forelock, the mirror doesn't reveal it on the chin as well. The mirror will depict it, reflect it precisely as it is, without exaggerating. And that is how a believer ought to be to another believer. If we take our marital conflict, how often in a source of argument, we tend to amplify it, we tend to exaggerate it, and that is where the crisis begins. So that's the third analogy. When we do things, we are accurate. The fourth analogy. الْمِرْآةُ صَامِتَةٌ تُرِيكَ مَنْ فِي بَدَلِكَ بِصَمْتٍ A mirror is silent. When you're standing in front of a mirror, it's not screaming you short, it's not screaming you obese, it's not screaming your nails are long, it's silently talking to you. That says, probably you need to drop some weight, probably you need to tone yourself down. The mirror is silent. A believer, when working, he speaks to the next human in a very discreet way. In English they say, criticism must be like rain, gentle, so it penetrates the ground. It penetrates the ground. And Imam Shafi'i rahimahullah said, تغمدني بنصحك في انفرادي وجنبني النصيحة في الجماعة فإن النصح بين الناس نوع من التوبيخ لا أرضى استماعا My brother, if I've done it wrong, take me in the corner and speak to me. I will listen to you the entire day. But if you chastise me and rebuke me in public, I won't listen to a word from you. I want to run because my time is moving. The fourth analogy or the first analogy of a mirror, إذا ابتعدت عن المرآة إخذالت صورته. هكذا أخوك المؤمن إذا ابتعدت عنه كتب سره. When you're standing in front of a mirror reveals everything. As soon as you disappear, the mirror hides your image. It doesn't whisper to the next man any details of the previous person. Or thank you for coming, the guy in front of you, or he was arrogant man. Oh, that guy was like that. No. A mirror conceals it. The next person who comes has no clue of the previous person. When I deal with my brother, what is the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? Understand, we're only talking of the first hadith. And I don't have time to go into more details. Then you look at the next analogy the scholars say. ان المراه من اهم اسباب الزينه فالله قد يتم التزيين الا بها. One of the greatest things of beautification is the mirror. The last thing the bride and the groom do is leave the mirror and move to the hall. And nowadays you have a mirror in your pocket as well, and it's like, really? So you cannot adorn yourself without a mirror. A believer is never completed, he is never perfected without another brother. Because that is his form of beautification. And then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the ulama make another analogy. إِنَّ الْمِرْآةَ لَا تَصْلِحُ إِلَّا عَلَى الظَّاهِرِ فَلَا تَغِيلَ لَهَا إِلَى الْبَاطِنِ. A mirror only reflects the external, it never reflects the internal. So deal with your brother based on the apparent, and don't probe and pry what's in his heart. The Prophet ﷺ said, you're a mirror to your brother. He didn't say you're an x-ray. He didn't say you're an x-ray. Anyway, coming back. The Prophet ﷺ said, إِنَّ دِمَاءَكُمْ وَأَوَّالَكُمْ وَأَعْرَاضَكُمْ عَلَيْهُمْ حَرَامٌ كَحُرْمَةِ يَوْمِكُمْ هَذَا. He just says, this day is sacred, this month is sacred. Remember, the honor of a believer is sacred. Then he said, أَلَا كُلُّ شَيْءٍ مِنْ أَمْرِ الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ تَحْتَ قَدَمَيَّ مَوْضُوعٌ. All the practices that were prevalent in the era of darkness, I have closed the chapter on it. I have closed it. لأن الحياة الجديدة التي يحياها المسلم لا صلة لها برجل الماضي وأضرانه. Because when a believer reforms and rehabilitates his life, he has to close the chapter on sin. You cannot wish for the happiness of Allah in your marriage and yet have an endless relationship. You cannot wish for prosperity in your union, yet you continue perusing porn. There is a blatant dichotomy between the two. There is contradiction of interest between the two. Then he said, وَإِنَّ أَوَّلَ لَمْ أَبَعُ مِنْ دِمَائِنَا دَمُ رَبِيعَةَ بْنَ الْحَارِثِ. Now this is profound. In the days of darkness, there was a lot of kidding, unjust, murder, innocent people were being killed. And the Prophet said, I'm closing the chapter on all forms of killing and murder that took place. But I'm starting off by forgiving the perpetrators who killed my nephew, and then I'm saying forgive others. And this is what differentiates Prophet would from any other system. We all can stand here and advocate virtue at the cost of others, but I must be immune and above the law. No, no, no. This is where the world is grappling. And this is where we are not seeing leadership in its true sense. The Prophet ﷺ said, we're closing the chapter on darkness. We want to put an end to all the killings that happened before Islam. And the first people whose killing I want to wipe out and put a clean slate, وَإِنَّ أَوَّلَ دَمٍ أَبْرَهُ مِنْ دِمَائِنَا دَمُ بْنُ رَبِيعَةَ بْنَ الْحَارِثِ. So Harith was the late uncle of the Prophet ﷺ. His son was Rabi'a, and Rabi'a was the cousin of the Prophet ﷺ. Rabi'a's son, كَانَ مُسْتَرْضَعًا فِي بَنِي سَعَدْ فَقَتَلَتْهُ هُدَيْلٌ. He was an infant, and he was being nursed and suckled by the Banu Sa'd tribe, the very tribe that had suckled and nursed the Prophet ﷺ. And while this infant was being nursed, in a crossfire, an arrow struck him and this infant's life was claimed. And obviously, the people from the family of the Prophet ﷺ had resentment justifiably for the perpetrators of this heinous crime. But the Prophet ﷺ said, I have forgiven them unconditionally, unequivocally. We close the chapter. And that's where I'm saying we need, what they say in English, forgive the next man. He might not deserve the forgiveness, but you deserve the peace. He might not deserve the forgiveness, but you deserve the peace. You need the happiness in your... Move on, close the chapter. Let's move on. Really, how long are we going to hold the grudges? And then he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, أَلَا كُلُّ شَيْءٍ مِنْ رِبَى الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ مَوْضُوعٌ تَحْتَ قَدَمَيَّةِ. All the things pertaining to interest and usury and riba that was so prevalent and dominant amongst the Arabs, I have closed the chapter on it. If you study the system of interest, it's lying, it's exploitation. It's for my empire to grow and for me to milk you further and drain you further. It's a system that's based in making the elite super rich and the poor poorer. It's not a system based on mutual care. لِكَيْلَا يَكُونَ تُولَةً بَيْنَ الْأَغْنِيَةِ مِنْكُمْ. Recently, BBC carried an article that the world's richest 1% now has the same amount of wealth like the world's remaining 99%. That's the disparity, that's the discrepancy, and yet people still wonder why Islam has made interest forbidden. The world's richest 1%. I have recently returned from Rohingya, and I've seen with my own eyes, and I can make you cry, and I will cry. By Allah, I've seen kids in the hundreds and the thousands, head to toe, totally nude. It's falling. A mum holds one child in her right hand, and holds the other child in the left hand, and climbs up a tree. We're crossing a river, a man-made river, which is so flimsy that probably it won't take one human across. And I look back and I see this old woman on the shoulders of her two sons, in a little holder and seated, waiting patiently, crouched up to cross over. That gave me a shivering that will never leave my heart and mind till the day I die. When that is the crisis that has rocked the planet, then how does it justify our continuous indulgence in extravagance? May Allah forgive and guide one and all. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, I have put an end to all the forms of interest that had happened. And where do I start? And the first type of interest, dealings and bearings that I forgive is the money that is owed to my uncle Abbas radiallahu anhu. Abbas radiallahu anhu had a lot of wealth and used to borrow of money, and people used to charge exorbitant amounts of interest. And that is how he was running. And the Prophet said, that's it. And we're not going to start saying after Abbas has been paid out, then we're cancelling it out. I'm cancelling it now, and whoever owes my uncle Abbas is done, you don't owe him a dime. Yes, his capital investment, that is his entitled to. فَلَكُمْ رُؤُوسُ أَمْوَالِكُمْ لَا تَظْلِمُونَ وَلَا تُظْلَمُونَ. And then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam advised that stay away from sin. Why? The ulama say, لِأَنَّ الذُّنُوبَ وَالْخَطَايَا تَفْعَلُ بِالْفَرْضِ مَا لَا يَفْعَلُهُ الْعَدُوُّ بِعَدُوِّهِ. Because sin destroys us more than all our enemies collectively can destroy us. My brother, whatever your sin, your crime, in privacy, in your own life, you know what you're doing and I know what I'm doing. By Allah, that is destroying you more than anything else that is in the world. For Allah, bil mar'a wal 'abd. And then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam spoke about taking care for women and the slave. Now, we all know, and probably those of us that are married, marriage is a challenging situation. They say every husband by default is a farmer. Every husband by default is a farmer because his survival depends on agriculture. Agriculture. And agriculture increases GDP, gross domestic peak. So this man had a big board outside his house for sale. What big computer and encyclopedia? Reason for selling, no more need. Wife got married, wife knows it all. And I have a backup server, mother-in-law. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam advised us in that final khutbah, be kind to your spouse. The women were mounted. Anjasha radiallahu anhu used to sing few couplets which used to excite the camels. So he's singing along and the camels are moving. Like the person has his horse, he leads and the horse moves on. And you know, it just gives him stimulation. So he's singing along and the camels are moving. And on that, there's precious cargo. There's women, precious. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, Ruwaydaka ya Anjasha. Ruwaydaka ya Anjasha. Anjasha, slowly, slowly. These are just not camels. They laden with women. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam used the most profound analogy. He said, Rikhum bin Qawali. They are carrying glass on their back. They carry glass on their back. And the scholars say, why did the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam compare or create this analogy? شُبِّهَ النِّسَاءُ بِالْقَوَالِيمِ بِالْرِقَّةِ وَالْضُعْفِ بِسُرْعَةِ الْإِنْكِسَارِ. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam created this comparison between women and glass because they are highly fragile, highly fragile, highly sensitive. You cannot be holding something solid and rigid and something of a glassy nature in the same way. And that's why as men we need to think hard do we have the tolerance of appreciating the sensitive nature? I have counseled marriage couples over my years of 20 years, 2 decades, but I haven't come across a greater teaching than the teaching of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this is for men and women. لا يفرق مؤمن مؤمنة إن كره منها خلقا رضي منها آخر. Oh man, this thing is all. No married workshop can give you in 2 words greater comfort and ease than the words of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He said, don't despise your spouse. If one quality of his or her impresses you, surely 1,000 qualities impress you. Focus on their positive energy and move on from their weaknesses. Just move on. Just analyze this hadith. I take it in. So you're having an issue with your wife, or she's having an issue with her husband, rightfully so. We're not ignoring that. But look at the other things. My house is clean, my kids are tired, I come home, it's a warm house, my parents are respected. Listen, man, listen, cut your losses and move on. If you start shunning people for their small weaknesses, you'll be left alone because no human is perfect. And then he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, and I'm going to end, he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, let me kind to the servant and the slave. And what's that? The vulnerable in society. The vulnerable. I was in UK now recently, and then I came back and I gave a talk. So a brother in the UK said to me something very profound. He said there was a person who was mentally impaired, he was not stable, and he was a bit of a liability at home because of his challenges. And we decided in our office to employ him, right? He went through a school that gave him some extra treatment and help and assistance. But when he came to the position of employing, nobody wanted to employ him. Now in the marketing world, in the corporate world, if you want to boost your sales, you bring a skilled man on board, you bring a competent man, you bring a high flyer, you bring a celebrity, and you put an image out, and you put a billboard, and then you invigorate your sales, you inject your sales, you boost your sales. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, from an Islamic perspective, if you want to boost your sales, bring the weak in your company, bring the feeble in your company, bring those that no one wants to employ. He said, bring the weak and the vulnerable and the feeble, and Allah will sustain you like He never sustained you. And he said, we employed this man, and then our sales rocketed instantly from the first month. And I met a young man, obviously not very stable and composed due to his challenges and disabilities. And may Allah make it easy. May Allah make it easy. Bring them on board. I gave a talk at a workshop recently in the UK for people with hard hearing and speech impairments. And that was the first time I formally spoke to them. And they complained through sign language that there's very limited material out for them. But those that will tap onto them, that will boost your sales. I give you with this hadith and the observation of a companion. He said, the thing that mesmerized me the most about the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, what changed me, لَقَدْ دَلَّنِي عَلَىٰ هَذَا النَّبِيِّ أَنَّهُ لَا يَأْمُرُ بِخَيْرٍ إِلَّا كَانَ أَوَّلَ آخِذٍ بِهِ وَلَا يَنْهَىٰ عَنْ شَرٍ إِلَّا كَانَ أَوَّلَ تَارِكٍ لَهُ وَأَنَّهُ يَغْلِبْ فَلَا يَبْطِئْ وَأَنَّهُ يُغْلَبْ فَلَا يُهْجِرْ أَشْهَدُ أَنَّهُ نَبِيٌّ. I'll just give you a translation. The thing that convinced me this is the actual man is whenever he advocated virtue, he practiced it first. Whenever he prohibited evil, he was the most distant from it. When victory fell in his lap, he was the furthest away from pomp and glory and from recognition. And when in battle at times people overpowered him, he never blurted any form of obscene or vulgar language. Unconvinced was he, the man. In the heart of victory, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was never proud, haughty or arrogant. Allah forgive, we when we lose him, we are proud and arrogant. May the Almighty instill and infuse and invite within us the great legacy of the khutbah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and may we return as greater ambassadors for the deen. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين من كل ذنب وخطيئة فاستغفروه إنه كان غفارا.